The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Thursday. Cheddar and Michael are here in studio with me. That's it, lads. This is the last Thursday show. It's emotional, isn't it? You know, we're just ahead of a huge final. We're not going to see each other again until next February. And it's just been a great year. And we've got to crown it all off with the All-Ireland Final. Are you going to the All-Ireland Final?
Absolutely, yeah. I've been probably heavy All-Ireland Final for a long number of years. Look, there are a real, I suppose, you know, key sporting occasion in Ireland every year. And we know for hurling people it would be strange if you didn't go there. The difficulty obviously is getting tickets and all
tickets,
of that.
Getting tickets, yeah. You have that sorted, the Laois County Board. Well, you left on bad terms there, so you just better have to go skirmishing for a ticket.
I know, I didn't break that, first of all. No, there's no bad terms. I don't leave anywhere on bad terms. I know, look, it's a fantastic occasion to look forward to, and it's, you know, there's a big sense of occasion about it as well. And the fact that Limerick are in it, no, not disparaging to Galway or any other county, but you know, we've spoken about this a number of times before, they're going to bring huge colour to this game, and you know, even just the occasion itself is worth going to see, even if you weren't interested in the hurling.
Yeah, there's 20,000 tickets and they're sold out. Well, it's free, so you know what I mean about being sold out. So they're all going into the Gaelic grounds to watch the match, so 20,000 are going to watch it in there on big screens. Obviously Dublin is going to be awash with green from Limerick, because, like, I suppose they do bring that kind of extra bit to it where they're just ravenous for an All-Ireland win.
Absolutely, like the fact that you can sell out the tickets in Limerick and have 20,000 extra supporters within the watching in the stadium is incredible, you know. I love Limerick for the fact that the supporters are so animated, and great to have a bit of crack with and chat to, and the banter is always it's never dull anyway.
It's never dull with Limerick. Exactly. What are we like about the All-Ireland being in mid-August? Cheddar, you're a traditionalist. Are you happy about this? To be honest with you, I don't notice any different. Is it any big difference here 2 weeks early? It's just an All-Ireland final build-up like any other, no?
Well, first of all, I'd say I'm not a traditionalist. but no, I don't see any real difference in it. You know, there's lots of positives here, I suppose, really. You're more than likely to have better weather in August, and hurling is simply better played in sunshine and that. I think it should give better chance to competing counties to run after county championships and that as well. You know, I certainly know that in Galway they have a lot of senior clubs and their championships would have run very late every year and that. And you know, so it should give a couple of extra weeks to county boards to be able to run after championships. And I think that might have been one of the reasons that it was put there in the first place.
Okay, well, I'm a traditionalist, so maybe you don't want to admit you are, Cheddar. Well, I'm a traditionalist in hurling and football. I'm old school. Another quick one, just before we move into something John Kiley was talking about, is the aggregate audience figures have come out for the hurling semi-finals, and they're 997,000, and the football is 100,000 less at 896. So, like, I mean, it just goes to show where football is and how hurling, the championship hurling's had. It's nice kind of brag, let's be honest, for hurling people to say that it's outperforming football from an audience point of view. And, like, I can see a shift even in the public kind of falling in love with the championship, whatever it is about this championship. It's just been classic after classic, and it's gripping people in there. They're exciting games. On the flip side, football isn't as much, and now we see attendances both in Croke Park. The hurling outperformed attendances in Croke Park, and they've also outperformed them now on TV. It's an incredible turnaround.
Yeah, you haven't got that huge dominant force in the hurling, really, like Dublin dominating the football, and people aren't getting sick. Like, Galway won it last year, fair enough, but this is a brand new format, and it's a chance for them to regain the title, which they do, be a huge achievement. And the standard of hurling this year has been incredible, like, you know, and we've had such a good summer. Like, the weather's been brilliant, the hurling's been great. There's very rarely been a one-sided match throughout the latter stages of the championship. It's all been so close. All these things play a part, and again, the football has struggled a bit with the teams are destroying other teams, and it takes a bit away from the spectacle. The hurling this year, it's hard to see it get better next year. It's been such a good championship.
Yeah. It's hard to top that. You can't top the Munster championship anyway. No, whether the Leinster championship and the All Ireland semi-finals.
Yeah. Just incredible. You couldn't ride it in the GAA. Delighted now with how the format went this year. And again, I'm just dying for this hurling match on Sunday. I think it's going to be another great spectacle.
It absolutely will. There's no doubt.
I might just come in. I suppose this is the first year of this format, so it's hard to gauge things, and you really need to look at things year on year, and maybe not just put up this year as the definitive year of hurling and that. Incidentally, I think next year's Munster Championship will be even closer because Tipperary and Water will have new management teams, and you always get that bounce with new management teams and that. Munster Championship next year is going to be dog eat dog, and maybe the games might be as good or as close, but they'll certainly be terribly intense.
And you have Dublin back in the mix in Leinster too.
There's one other point I wanted to make though. It's incredibly unusual that you would have had so many classic close games in a game where there's very high scoring, where there's an opportunity for a team to beat the others by 10 points instead of a close game. I don't think we'll ever see that again. You see basketball, some of the times it might score, might be 120 to 110 points or something like that, and it's still a classic game, but one team's beating the other by 10 points because there simply is a lot of scoring. Similarly in the hurling, the average point score is somewhere around 30 points per game now, yet one team beats the other by 1 point or two, and they're very,
it's unreal,
very close.
Isn't it? Yeah.
That is very unusual, I think, in any sporting context.
Yeah. After having 9 point leads in so many games, or teams have gone 8 or 9 points up and being tracked back, teams' mentalities are getting so much stronger now. They're never beaten, and
it's never over.
Absolutely. And a team who's winning by 8 or 9 points will know that it's capable to be tracked back as well. So it's the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
So
there's been loads of comebacks. It's had everything. And I take your point, Cheddar. To have such high scoring games that are ending in draws is unreal. John Kiley is giving out about 26 men panels, lads. And he's saying we've 36 players in training busting their ass and making a huge contribution who are equally as valuable as any man that starts in a match day of 15, and yet he can't even have his name on the programme. I have an issue with that. So it's wrong that they should get a jersey and they should be sitting on the bench. So what's your take on this? I agree with John Kiley here. What harm is having lads being on the bus in a jersey and their name on the programme? What harm is just a bit of ink on the programme? What I don't see any problem in Limerick have a huge issue. Well, it's a huge plus for them in the squad that they have. 36 players in training, and you have to go to six of them to say you're not even coming on the bus. And that you're preaching togetherness and you're all in it together, and it's a big panel and you're all important, and then 10 lads don't travel with the team.
I wouldn't know the logistics. Cheddar would probably be on top of that a bit more, with extra jerseys and gear and all. I don't know, but I'd be all up for say a 30 man panel, Willie. I think that's quite fair, and especially with the emphasis now on championships, it's so tough on players and injury wise to have them players there. Again, 36 I think would be too much. I think there'd be too much distraction around, because to keep 36 lads focused on the day, and if some of them know they're not going to play, they mightn't be as in tune going to the game, and there might be a bit of a distraction on the pitch, on the bus on the way, or in the dressing room. I'd cut it to 30. I think 30 is a fair number. And look, I travelled for years with lads in the car to train and day in day out who weren't making that 26, and you can see they're there with you every day in training and they're not making it. It's heartbreaking to watch, and they're putting in such hard work. But I think lads know at the start of the year within the panel that it is 26. They know it. They know if they don't make it, it's not something that's caught up with them or surprised them at the time. So but I understand. I'd put it to 30 if it was me. If I had a choice, I'd have 30. I think it's a fair number.
Put it to 30. Is 36 a lot? I know lads be injured. You need your 15 versus 15. Is 36 a lot, even as a training panel, Cheddar?
I suppose where it's gone now, no, it's not. Because you would always have two or three injured or in rehab or something like that. Bear in mind that Limerick have lost Paul Brown, so it's 35 actually now, if those numbers are right. It looks a big number, all right. And look, that's quite costly, on county boards and that. It does cause problems, but it's very, very tough. And, all managers have had to do this. This could be between two players that are neck and neck for number 26 jersey on the team. And you might actually pick one over the other because in this game, he suits your game plan a little bit more than the other or something like that. So it does cause problems, and it's very, very tough on players, particularly at an All-Ireland level. Limerick have been in a number of All-Irelands. Maybe they're a little bit better, more equipped than other counties, but they haven't won one since 73. And beyond that photograph, that team photograph and that panel photograph is really, really important to players and to families and all all of those. So it is quite tough. On the other side of that, players are intelligent, they know where they stand on things, and it goes back to the communications, I suppose, between management and team, and the respect that the team players have for their management in terms of explaining these things to them. It is quite tough. But I think there's one other point here, Ollie, that I think everybody has missed. I think John Kiely has been very clever in the way he has used, media releases at particular times over the last couple of days, and I think he's hoodwinked an awful lot of the media into this, into I think these are serious issues. Yes, they are, but you know, John said nothing for the last 6 months or so, and I think he's protected his team well from media intrusion over the last couple of weeks by, I suppose, you know, selected media releases, which gets people talking about things that, you know, maybe he doesn't want them to be talking about the team and so on and so on.
Yeah, well, I'd say all these quotes will be coming from a media day, one media day that they had, and David Reedy, who we'll talk about in a minute, he was put up, so there was no actual start. Paul Brown was there, who's injured. David is not on the starting team since the championship started, so he definitely kept his kind of starting 15 sheltered from any of that media stuff.
And as well, Woolly, that the players who aren't starting or who aren't in that 26 are going to be looking at that saying, our manager's standing up for us. He's very clever in what he did. But I think the big thing in championship this year is the way the format is. Like, if you play on Saturday and you're playing the next Saturday, there's no time in between that for lads who aren't in the 26 to get in the 26, because the only way you do it is training matches. So how can you swap subs during the week who haven't played, who haven't trained? How do you justify that as a manager, saying, well, you're going to be 26 this week, even though nothing's changed?
And the six obviously didn't play, so they don't need to be rested.
Exactly, they're not carrying
knots.
It's very hard. So lads who aren't in that 26 come to start a championship, how do you get into it?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get in? Like, there's no way, there's no space there.
I think that's a good point, Michael. And if you look at the round robin league at the start of the championship, winter championship, and entry championship, that's a really, really good point. You're trying to motivate players, particularly your from, say, 18 to 25 players, to push hard, to push players on the team. Because at the end of the day, the strength of your 18 to 25 is the strength of your team. And they're the guys that's going to push people and make sure that they earn the jersey and all of that. How can you do that when there's not realistic internal games going on where they can actually show themselves in that? I think John's argument is a little bit weakened as well by the fact that If he had 20 subs available to him, would he use the 20? Well, no, you wouldn't. I think there's a middle ground there somewhere that, you know, might suit everybody. I certainly take his point, because all managers have been in this position of trying to explain to a player that has given his heart and soul to get into this team and to push on his county, for all of those right things, and you've got to tell him, sorry, on the big day, you can't actually even tug out in the county's colours to be with our team. That's very, very difficult to do, and very, very tough on the players.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. He always also makes the point that there should be more than five subs. Now, I'd be very sympathetic towards his panel idea. I'm less sympathetic towards this. I think this is obviously because they've such a good bloody bench, they can bring on seven lads that are just as good. But he does make the point that because games are coming thick and fast and you have your five subs on and then two of your players go down with cramp, at 65 minutes you have all your subs on, which makes sense to have them on, at least give them something. Then in the last minutes there's usually 6 minutes of injury time, so you still have 11 minutes left. Two of your lads go down for cramp, they can't keep going. Then you're down to 13 players in a championship match.
I think, Willie, if that question had been asked to Joe O'Connor, he would have had a different response to that. He'd say all the players that I train are fully fit to go 70 minutes full stop. And I think the second point in that is that, look, if that was allowed, it would really suit the top five counties, because their panels of quality players are simply way bigger, so their use of their panel would be much more, I suppose, strong for them than it would be for certainly any team from, say, eight down.
Yeah, okay, right. Just another quick one here. I'm wondering, because we all know that Garrod McInerney is going to be back in now, so he's had that extra 2 weeks to fix his calf problem, and he'll go back in centre back. And Joe Cooney was obviously so good wing back the last day, and Niall Burke came in and did well when he was in the forwards. So now Joe Cooney, after fighting a fire in the half back line, now finds himself going, here, hang on a minute, where's my bloody place in this team? This has happened to me before with Leash. When you're a versatile player and you can just jump around anywhere, you fix problems on a day, but you've no home. You know what I mean? Joe Cooney, he's not going to lose out. It'd probably be Niall Burke, because they're so used to giving him a break. But then Niall Burke is thinking, do you know, I played the whole game the last day. It just, being versatile is a strength, because you've a better chance of getting on the team because you're going to get in there somewhere if somebody gets injured. But it's also a weakness in that you never become a specialist.
Yeah, you're a problem solver, Willie. The only thing is that a manager has to find the problem first. So yes. If you wait on the bench until there is a problem, then you're put in any position. I think Cooney's going to start in the wing and Burke will be the sub.
We'll have to
he makes big impacts when he comes in anyway. And I think because we haven't seen Joe come on as a sub and how much of an impact he'll make, I just think not. I can't see anything else but Cooney on the wing and Burke coming on instead.
Do you think about Cheddar, even if, say, like Burke was going so well, because Burke is so used, you're so used to telling Burke that he's not starting, would a manager go, geez, well, this is going to be an easier conversation than Joe Cooney, who always starts?
Oh, no,
would that never come into your mind?
Absolutely not at all. I think it hinges on a little bit different, particularly for Sunday. I think it hinges, and we might talk about it a little bit later on, how Galway want to start the game. Do they want to attack and break down the Limerick system of play, because that's a different forward formation if they do that, or do they want to maybe attack maybe some Limerick insecurities at the start of the game and try and put points on the board, because they are different types of players. So I think that's what Michael Donoghue will be looking at. It's not necessarily history or what happened last Sunday. I mean, those problems and those solutions were in place and all that's resolved. You know, there's a new set of challenges for Sunday for Micheál Donoghue and for Franny and for Noel, and that's what they'll be looking at. You know, how can we I suppose gain the initiative earlier on against Limerick and you know, create doubt in their mind and that, and what type of a game plan are we going to play from the start, because they are two different types of players. Joe Cooney gives you a different game skill than
Niall Burke.
And you know, the other side of that is, you know, do you bring on your shooters towards the end of the game when the opposition backs may be tiring a little bit and the space opens up a little bit, because look, that's what Limerick are doing with Shane Dowland, and Galway are doing something similar with Burke. So there are big decisions for management, obviously, but I don't see it. I think Galway will go with
Cooney back on the wing.
Absolutely, real disruption. Disrupt the Limerick half back line, break their game plan, and then put the shooters on the field to finish the game.
David Reedy, lads, I was reading about him, and you wouldn't always read pieces about David Reedy, but like I said, he was put up for the media day, so he learned a little bit. I didn't know he'd gone to Kildare. Yeah. He went, Nicky Quaid was over Kildare, and Joe Quaid, sorry, and to play with the Kildare Hurlers, and he played with them because he was teaching down there. I didn't even remember that he'd started most of the league games. He scored 14 points for the league. He's like the forgotten man. Yeah. So he played no championship game until he came on as a sub against Cork and got a point. Now, he had been a regular wing forward throughout the league, but Kyle Hayes didn't play most of the league. I think Kyle was with the under-21, so Kyle Hayes only got back for a league quarter-final against Clare. And then the half forward line got settled on Tom Morrissey, Kyle Hayes, and Rod Hegarty. And David Reedy didn't really get back. He came on in both the league quarterfinal and league semi-final, but then didn't see any championship action. So it's just interesting, even kind of reading about David. But like, I mean, this is the strength of the Limerick panel. David could come on now in the All-Ireland final and just kind of be in that mindset that here I'm back in here now.
Absolutely. Like, normally the league format and your form, like if anyone else had scored what he had scored in the league, your position is nailed down in that half forward line. But it's such a strong half forward line, and Hayes is so important to what Limerick do. His pace is phenomenal, and when he breaks that line, he creates so much havoc and goals opportunities. Look, Reedy's a fantastic hurler. The only thing is, John Coyley's going to know how good he is, will he, and believe in how the impact he's going to make when he comes on. So he has that in his locker where he knows, if I come on, I have the confidence to make him do a bit of damage. You know, yeah. It has taken his time, and it would be tough to have such a good league and wait to come on. But again, he made an impact when he came on against Cork.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, the thing about Reedy is that Kiley didn't fancy him when he took over.
Yeah.
So Reedy didn't make the first panel under Kiley. So that's when he went off to Kildare. So immediately, Kiley probably didn't fancy Reedy. And Reedy has gone away to Kildare. He's actually said about Kildare that the standards of professionalism on the Kildare squad is up there with the very top teams. He paid them a lovely compliment. Comes back in, wins Kiley over, gets in for the league, then falls kind of out of favour for championship, and then comes back on against Cork and scores a point. So, like, I mean, the positive kind of attitude of this fella, like, should be absolutely applauded.
First of all, Kildare were allowed to do this. They're allowed to actually pick players from other counties because of the position that they're
in. Mulhall as well.
John Mulhall, and I think they actually started first maybe with David Kennedy from Lochmore, Castellani and Tipperary, who was centre back with Tipperary for a number of years, and he actually hurled with Kildare. There was a number of others as well. I just can't recall their names at the minute. But David Reedy was probably important as well. At Joe Quaid was the manager of Kildare for the last 3 or 4 years, so he would have known David Reedy and what he could bring to it. And David Reedy works in Kildare, so that's the real reason why those things were happening. But I take your other point, Woolley. Incidentally, David Reedy was on and off the panel before John Kiley's time. It wasn't just John Kiley that he had been a peripheral player on the panel for a number of years there. But when you look at David Reedy playing and you look at Tom Morrissey and Garrod Hegarty playing as defensive wing forwards, he brings something different to what those two bring. They're two big, aggressive, ball-winning ability players. And David Reedy playing on Sunday might actually bring something different to Limerick, to an All-Ireland. And we might talk about this later on. I think Limerick need to bring something different to this game. And David Reedy could provide the same type of game that his namesake in Clare provides, or as Kearney in Cork provides, as a third midfielder playing out of wing forward but playing around the middle, picking up a lot of ball, running out of the defence and that. And I suspect that Paul Kinnerk and John Kiley and Alan Cunningham will bring something different to the table, because that's what Paul Kinnerk does in big games, and I suspect they will bring something. So David Reedy could very well start on Sunday in a defined role. The thing about it is he doesn't really fit that particularly air game that Garrod Hegarty and that Tom Morrissey would bring to the game, and that physicality to be able to break through a half back line. He doesn't have that. He's a different type of game. So the reason he's not playing is not because of his abilities or that. It's because he may not just fit into the system that Limerick play at the minute.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's it. Right, two other things before we move on and talk about the match, because there's loads of talking points for the match. I was reading, because we're doing a live show tomorrow night, and I was looking back at the last time Limerick played Galway, and it was 1980, and I went on Wikipedia, and in 1980 Galway beat Kildare, Offaly and Limerick to win the All-Ireland, and Limerick beat Cork in the Munster final. Cork were going for six in a row and went straight into an All-Ireland final. Is that right, Cheddar? Like, why? Where would Galway be playing Kildare here in an All-Ireland quarter final?
Yeah, I think I think maybe Kildare won the All-Ireland B Championship. At that stage there was an All-Ireland B Championship. Actually Leash were in it a couple of years. They might have been in it the year before actually, and then came into the Leinster Championship that year in 1980. I think in 1979 Leash won the All-Ireland B and came in at the semi-final stage against Galway actually, and that was quite close. There wasn't that much in that game, if my memory serves me right, and that was the actual form at the time. But look, very strange that Galway got into an All-Ireland really playing one game, I suppose, and won an All-Ireland, whereas now I think they're going to maybe be playing, if they win on Sunday, they'll have played 9 top class games. Yeah. A very, very different format now. And you'd have to ask the question, considering the quality of Galway right from the 50s up, they've had a serious hurling team. Why they didn't win more All-Irelands with because that was a serious benefit, just play one match.
Yeah,
just have a couple of matches.
It was a blessing and a curse, yeah, I suppose.
It may very well have been, but you'd probably say,
I'd probably take the two. Yeah.
I probably would take the two. It was least in the minute. I'd definitely take it, I can tell you. But look, that was an interesting. There's one other interesting facet of that 1980s game. First of all, it was a serious Galway team that had been there for a couple of years. I remember Galway winning the 75 league. I stand corrected, it might have the wrong year, but winning the league in 75, I think it was against Kilkenny. I think they were in the All-Ireland maybe the previous year or two against Kilkenny when they were expected to win it and didn't. And probably had the best hurler, one of the best hurlers, definitely the best big man I've ever seen in John Connolly. Most skillful, athletic, best hurler I've seen. I think he ended up his career maybe at full forward and won an All-Ireland medal. Everybody was delighted to see that. He was formerly a midfielder. Also won a club championship with Castlegar. So they were a serious team. The last point I'd want to make on that, which is relevant for Sunday, there were odds on the following year to beat Offaly. Hammered Offaly out of the park in the first round of the 81 All-Ireland, and Offaly came back and beat him. So, and Offaly were coming from nowhere, obviously, at that time. They'd won no All-Ireland.
Right, so there's parallels here.
There are little ones that, look, to me, Notting on Sunday, completely different areas, completely different teams and that. But look, there is a little bit of history here.
Yeah, no, definitely. Last one is a Johnny Pilkington story, which I really liked. And this was a couple of the journalists, Kieran Shannon and Kieran Cunningham and Michael Verney, were talking about access to players. And there used to be a captain's interview where the week before the All-Ireland, both captains would meet the journalists and they would be relaxed, and they were just kind of discussing how the times have changed and how it's sad that there's no such thing as the big one-on-one interview anymore. But this is Anthony Daly telling a story about when he did it in 95. So he says, we had some good crack along the way. I remember for the captain's table interview of 1995. Imagine a captain's table interview the week before the All-Ireland. Isn't it like bygone days? It's like so far. So anyways, I was to sit down with Johnny Pilkington in Mullingar. I had no car at the time, hadn't driven at that stage, so my brother took half day to drop me down. He went away for a bite to eat, and I met up with Johnny and Enda McAvoy, who was conducting the interview. I presume none of you two will drink wine, says Enda. Well, I wouldn't mind a bottle of red, says Johnny, and I'm sure Anthony will give me a hand with it. So he says, that was the week before the All-Ireland final, us and Clare not touching a drop since the semi-final, and we polished a bottle of red that day. If anyone had walked in on us, what would they have been thinking? Johnny was a gas man. And I was actually seeing some of the replies on Twitter, and it was like, that is very, very relaxed for Johnny Pilkington, a half a bottle of wine a week before.
That's like, all what they're telling us. I can imagine it went on. Look, they're brilliant stories, William. When you read all these contractual things that players have to sign these days, now it takes away from it. Some of my fondest memories are off the pitch throughout my career, you know, and stories like that, which you probably can't tell now because you'd be in so much trouble. They're brilliant, and they're what makes the GAA GAA. And you wouldn't have to twist Aylo's arm too hard.
No,
look, he's a great man to have a point with, and I can imagine the stories the two of them told each other. But they're the first two to hit each other as well the following week, you know. Oh, yeah. So I love hearing stories like that. I think they're absolutely brilliant.
I think it was the year that Clare and Offaly drew then in the match in Croke Park, where all the Offaly fans sat down, sure, Pilkington was straight up in the bar necking them down before they got word then that there was a replay. Yeah. They're like, oh lord. Yeah. After whatever. But like those stories are great, Cheddar. And while I love the way the GA has gone so professional, and we all know, look at the games they're giving us, which is the flip side of it, like, which is unbelievable. I think it's a little bit sad that these stories will never become a thing, will never really be a thing again, that it's gone so sanitised now and so professional, almost to the point where it's on different levels to rugby and soccer, which are actual professional sports, that you'll never have this kind of a fella stepping out of line and maybe getting reprimanded. Usually those lads are just dismissed now and gotten rid of as a bad egg.
I suppose, look where the performances is in hurling at the minute, and obviously in Getty football as well, you probably wouldn't survive with that going on for too long. And the other side of that is, look, if you allow one person to do that, well then you're going to have to allow the whole family to do it. And then, you know, performance drops, and you just can't go there now, particularly with the level of performance that players, I mean, you spoke earlier on, Willie, about John Kiley saying that we needed more subs because players were cramming towards the end of the game. Well, look, you can't have it both ways. You either are in high performance mentality and environment, or you are not. And you know, supporters and journalists and everybody else wouldn't be long about giving out about a player on Sunday if he had a poor game and he heard he was after having a bottle of wine the week before. They wouldn't be long about hanging him out to dry.
No, well, that's
pardon,
true.
Pardon the pun. The thing I was surprised about was that it actually was a bottle of wine. That, you know, at the thought back in those days, we certainly weren't used to wine anyway. I do remember plenty of times, and probably maybe at club times, at county final time, I can certainly you know, remember a player or two that would have a fag in his dressing room at half time. You know, you certainly never see any of that now. I'd be gobsmacked if any players were even smoking now, to be honest with you. So I take your point, Willie, and that leads to another point. The level of professionalism now and the level of intensity of preparation and all of that is leading to some players retiring early because they simply kind of cope with those demands. And it's not that it's psychological, it is just simply having the time to cope with those demands. And a lot of players are retiring now 27, 28, because, you know, they've moved on in life, they're building a house, they're getting married or whatever, wherever they are, or a new job, or moving on in their job. So I do take your point that, you know, a little bit of the enjoyment and a little bit of less pressure on players to perform would probably lead to them having longer careers and a little bit more crack. But as I say, that's a complete contradiction of you saying then in your dressing room, we're going to have a high performance dressing room here and everything we do.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Right, lads, we'll come back and we'll talk about the match.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck now, in fairness. Pure luck. Fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
So I'm wondering about the Limerick psychology going into this game, lads. We'll talk some tactics now in a minute, but like, I mean, I've read some quotes and about this team being a team of winners, and you know, they've won everything coming up along, but still that traditional history of Limerick has been, recent history has not been winning All Irelands. And we saw with Mayo when they came along in 2013 or 2012 against Donegal in the final. It was their first final back. It was a totally new panel from the one that had lost in 2006. And the whole talk then was, well, this is a whole new panel where the weight of history doesn't kind of lean on us. Still, I'm thinking, like, I mean, I often said this on the football show. When I used to play with Port Leash, playing on a team that traditionally won, I never worried 2 points down with 10 minutes to go, because I said, we wouldn't be worried. When I was two points down with Leash, I'd be like, how are we going? You know, the psychology is different. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. Like, I know it's a new panel and these lads are winners, but with 10 minutes to go, could something come into their heads? Jesus, look at 94 and 96. And
absolutely, I think. Like, if Limerick lose Sunday, the weight of the history is on their shoulders, is on this team's shoulders straight away. And if Mayo had won that first one when they were all young lads coming through, would they have won four more? Like, you know, would that psychology be there in the last few minutes against the Dubs? Oh, we're good enough to beat these, we've done it before, we'll win it now again. I think that's a huge part to play. Winning under minors and 21s is completely different than winning a senior All-Ireland Championship, and you want to get that monkey off the back quickly. Like, if Limerick do manage to win Sunday, they're such a young team and they've done it already, they could win a lot more in their career before. But if they don't, again, the pressure is heaped on them. It's a huge amount of pressure straight away on young players' backs.
Yeah.
So I think, like, now's the time to do it on Sunday. Young panel, I know they've no fear, they don't fear anybody, they've showed that in the way they've hurled, and their composure in all the games has been huge for a young team. So they have the confidence and mentality to win these games, but an All-Ireland final is a different kettle of fish than
Clare came in and won it that first year, and I do take Michael's point that if they lose this, then they're into that bracket cheddar. So, like, I mean, I know they're coming in, it's almost a shot to nothing for them, but it's not really though, because they don't want to start their senior All-Ireland kind of chances with a loss and then be grouped in with the other teams that have done it.
Look, I think there's a couple of things. I don't think it's as simple as that. I do take Michael's point, and I do take your point, Willie, that if you've been there before and you've been successful, when you come under pressure, you know you're not as vulnerable as you would be if you're coming into your first All-Ireland. And I think that is a bit of a problem for Limerick, and that's why the start on Sunday is so important for them, and how they play, and that they get to the method of their play going early. But look, there's Caroline Currid is involved with these teams. They would have a lot of coping mechanisms for this type of thing. And one of the things you're seeing, some of the stuff that you're hearing coming out of the Limerick dressing room is what's being heard by players in the dressing room. It's the accentuation of positives, and building yourself up that you have the capacity to be able to get this job done. But like everything else, it's like the old army thing that, you know, you can have all the plans in the world, but, you know, until you come out and face the opposition, you don't really know how they're going to work. And when you come under pressure, and even just being out on the field in All-Ireland, and you know, I've got to say that I don't have this experience, but you know, looking at the history of things, when you go out there, that's pressure in itself in terms of how you're going to perform. And sometimes some players react differently, and you can have all the coping mechanisms in the world, but you may not be able to react positively at that given time. But if you have that experience, you know, for a number of years going through, I think there's been a couple of articles in different papers over the last couple of days by different players who have played in All-Irelands and have made this point, and Willie, you have made the point as well, that you just seem to have that inner confidence in you that, look, we might go 2 or 3 points down here, we're under pressure, but we'll be able to find a way through because we have found a way through before.
Yeah.
So I think it is an important point. I think Michael makes a good point on that it is an important point for Sunday. I don't believe this, that, you know, the history. I think I do believe teams are different. I think leadership within teams and all of that are just simply different, and Limerick will bring a completely different mindset to the game on Sunday. But when the pressure is really on, you know, how are people going to react to that, I think, is more important.
The two teams are huge, lads. So I was reading a piece in the Irish Times from Eamon Donoghue, and he's crunched some numbers. So he says that the two teams have a combined average height of 6'2". Like, I mean, that's unbelievable. He says only five players from the two teams are under 6 foot. Mm. Now, there's a little disclaimer on this, that all these heights are taken from match programmes when players tell lies. I used to say I was 6 foot. Yeah. I used to say I was 6 foot because it was a nice round number.
And no, I don't believe that.
I'd always say I was 12 stone and 6 foot. It was 6 into 12 twice. Yeah. I just thought this had a nice kind of symmetry to it. So I have to go. I remember Alan Brogan one time, I was reading the Dublin programme, and Alan had himself in a 6 foot one and 14 stone, and I bring him up. So where are you going with this? And he's laughing. This is all the psychology, because it does work. Yeah. People look at Jesus, Dublin are huge, and there is a psychological thing to it. So I'm taking it a little bit with a pinch of salt, but like, it is true that both teams are really, really big. Another thing he says, teams have been getting bigger and bigger in every way. He says the average weight in the 2013 final was 81 kg, and this year it's 86 kg. So teams are getting bigger physically, in height and in size.
Well, you see, you're being monitored straight away with the strength and conditioning coach. Like, you heard Joe Canning, I think, before saying he went in at 87, 88 before and felt overweight and felt he wasn't as mobile as before, and now he finds his ideal one is 85, 84, 85. Like, strength and conditioning coaches have this mapped out for individuals throughout the year, and it's okay being 88 kg, 87 kg if you're mobile with that weight on you. Like, once you're not going in doing beach weights and having huge biceps for no reason in hurling, like, you know, you don't need them. You don't. They don't pay any. There's no backup for having big biceps in hurling, although they look good. You know, like, it's right muscles for the right things in what you're going to use them for. So I think strength and conditioning coaches will really, like, they're not going to let you go in 88 for no reason or 86, whatever it is. But you have to be able to take the pounding of bigger men as well. So if you're 81 kg, it's a lot to give up to a bigger man who's able to move. So obviously teams are looking at this in strength and conditioning coaching, and we have to match up here. And especially with Galway being the benchmark, I think, for teams now, they have to weigh up and get bigger.
Yeah, Johnny Glynn's 98 kg. Like, he's a beast of a man, and then with those hands like the bucket of a JCB cheddar, as you like to say. Like, you look, Mike Casey is 6 foot and he's 75 kg. That's a huge amount. That's 23 kg he's given up on Johnny Glynn.
I wouldn't have him 6 foot either. I didn't think he was.
Maybe he might be adding on to that as well. Like, I mean, but that's a huge mismatch in there.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, players do add to it. By the way, management teams do add to it as well. It is important. And I think even if you looked at the earlier Munster rugby teams, the numbers on their back were quite small, and, you know, as Michael says, they look like beasts of men, but sometimes it's just an optical illusion, a bit of a trick of the eye. So you take every advantage you can here. And I think what's amazing at the minute is, yes, the size of the players, but the skill and speed and quickness of those big players is unusual. And if you look back on a number of years, you'll probably need to go back to the likes of Ray Cummins and some of those players, and I could probably count them in one hand here, the really big players who were also quick and very skillful and had great vision around the game. So it's unusual, I think, on two teams to see so many really big, quick players with really good vision of how to play the game. And obviously, look, the old boxing parlance comes in here as well. You know, a good big one will always beat a good little one. I suppose it's a real advantage for Limerick and a real advantage for Galway that you have big, skillful players, because you can certainly play an awful lot of, you know, a number of game plans with that type of player available to you.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, just on Johnny Glynn, right? So we want to talk about, obviously, the tactics of the Limerick half forward line and all that kind of thing, and the Galway half back line of a big decision to make. So just want to talk with Johnny Glynn first, because there's a stat here in that piece, and he says since coming on in the drawn Leinster final, he has faced 31 balls into him. Him or a teammate have won 65% of those, and he has scored 2-2. There have been Galway shooting opportunities after 55% of the balls struck in. A good return, given most of these were contestable deliveries. So they're getting it. That's a good return coming off Johnny Glynn. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, this isn't just aimless balls. And if you look, 31 balls into him, that's over the drawn length. That's over three games, right? So you're looking at about 10 balls a game, which isn't, that's 5.5. It's not, they're not kind of launching everything down in on him, you know?
Yeah, it's not even what he's winning. It's like Conor Whelan be loving it as well, mopping up around him, you know? And Michael Casey, John Coyley definitely has question marks for Sunday, because Michael Casey's a brilliant hurler, but I just think height wise he's given up too much.
What's he like? Has he come
tenacious
up against the lad?
He's so tenacious. But tenacity doesn't really count when you have Johnny Glynn, who, like, the wingspan of his arms alone, I don't think Casey will get near him with a hurl even. So it's going to be like, he might surprise me Sunday if he starts, but I think Seamus Hickey might even be more suited to him. He's about 2 or 3 inches taller. Even if he stops him catching the ball, he's doing his job. You know, he doesn't have to come out with a ton of ball there. So I think if I was looking at it, I think Hickey might suit him a bit better, right. You know, just height wise alone, will he, you know, never mind hurling.
What do you think? Can he spoil him then, Cheddar, instead?
I don't think he'd change. It definitely wouldn't change at this stage, I would think, Michael. I do take your point. But I do think that Mike Casey is that type of fullback as well, that likes that physical game. Now, I do agree with you. Look, he's a little bit outmatched here, but look, so is everybody else. And I think, you know, you would look at a number of things technically about how you would stop Johnny Glynn. I'll come into a different point in a minute. Johnny Glynn, you will do an awful lot of analysis of how Johnny Glynn, his best way of actually receiving ball and gaining primary possession, and he generally speaking makes a run and reaches away from himself to do that. So, you know, you might actually change your positional, your defensive position on a player like that, because it just suits you to do that and just spoil the ball to the ground. You just simply have to stop him winning the ball, because he's not as good in second phase play. Now, he's a serious handful for anybody. I'm not saying he isn't, but you would look at, and I'm absolutely sure that Limerick management will be doing this, look at an individual each player, what's their behaviours on incoming ball, and then deciding how you're going to actually defend that. And I actually think, you know, that Mike Casey might be as good as what they have there. Now, bear in mind, Richie English was an under 21, was full back for the under 21s at a different time as well, was man of the match, I think, in an All-Ireland under 21. So they have a couple of options there, even without you know, changing their team, just moving some things around. But I'll go back to another point. I'm not too sure that Galway are either going to start on Sunday, I think, in two ways. They're either going to go for high scores earlier on and you know, put doubt in Limerick and create doubt in their mind about where they are, or they're going to go, we'll say, let's disrupt the Limerick game plan big time here. And if they were doing that, I'd actually probably move Johnny Glynn to centre forward on Declan Hannan. So it may not be that Mike Casey is going to be playing on him, and I think Micheál Donoghue will look at that. You know, how can we gain the initiative early here? We can either go at Limerick and you know, start to go on their insecurities of being in their first final, let them play the game plan the way they want to play it, but we'll outscore them with a big score like they did in the Leinster final replay and the replay All-Ireland semi-final against Clare, and bank then that, look, Limerick just, you know, Limerick will throw in the towel here.
Sorry, I'll just give you another stat then, just on that. Remember Port Leash, we used to play against Drabley, and they'd have Larry Keenan, and what we ended up doing is saying we won't jump with him at all because we can't catch with him, so we'll let him win it uncontested, and we're ready with both feet planted to take the ball up, because wouldn't have been great with the ball in hand. Like, I mean, that's surely an option for Johnny Glynn. If you jump up with Johnny Glynn, he's going to catch it, you're landing down off balance, and before you know it, the ball's in the back of the net. Are you better off just letting him up and letting him catch it, or is that too risky of a move?
Well, he's very physical, and look, as Cheddar said, he isn't great with ball possession. He normally tries to hand it off to someone, but he's very effective at doing that. So if you're doing that game plan, it is a dodgy one, Willie. But
if he lays it off, then you look like you haven't even tried.
Exactly. And you need that half back line tracking their men and tracking their runs and stopping them runs coming in, so he hasn't got someone to hand it off to straight away, because you're going to need a few seconds to get around that man. You know, he's so big. For them.
I think you're trying to stop him. You've got the contest, even for the confidence in your team, and that, you know, just giving up primary possession to somebody like that, you know, with the likes of Cathal Mannion and Conor Whelan sniffing around that. Yeah. Look, you're conceding too much.
That's fair enough.
Incidentally, Willie, I do remember even at club level, we played cameras in the earlier part of our team, and Martin Cuddy was Leash centre forward at the time. He was a very, very physical player, fantastic centre forward for Leash and for Cameras. Now, we would always contest the ball with him, but if he took the ball, he generally speaking put it on his hurley and take you on, eyeball you, break or tackle, burst through you, and then of course create offloads then coming through your defence. And if he actually won the ball, we would actually step away from him and force him to play the ball on his hurley, because once you had it on his hurley, he couldn't play it again. So there are some little tactical things you can do, and there's a huge amount of tactical things you can do in terms of your body positioning on a big player like that, getting the ball to ground and then have tidy cornerbacks in close to you to be able to hoover that ball up and work it out the field.
He's right handed, so it's quite awkward. He goes with his right. I'd just be slapping that right arm all the time. That's all I used to do. Every time we played him, I had to mark him and forget about the ball, just slap the hand at a good time and the ball would break, and then once it's on the ground it's
and
much
is he good
to
is he good at twisting his body to
very
keep
good,
you away from
very
him
very good
is.
Very good. So it's just, it's timing more than anything else, Woody. So just right. I'll stand way off him, and then when the ball's coming in, just play his hand all the time.
Right,
you know, but
okay. Right, well, here's another stat for you here, lads. So Limerick have only conceded 10 goals in 14 matches this year, which isn't a phenomenal in hurling, to be averaging less than a goal a game, well less than a goal a game. So their average concession for 2018 is 23 points per match. Again, that's impressive. So, like, I mean, they did struggle to deal with John Conlon's ball winning in Ennis. He scored 4 from play that day. And wait until you hear this. 71% of their goals conceded this summer have been off the back of high balls. You know what I mean? That just jumped out at me, 70%. And then I'm looking at Johnny Glynn and of the whole thing.
Like, Finn English and Casey are brilliant hurlers, really good. It's just that they have the height disadvantage there. That's, you know, like, they're so tenacious, they're brilliant at coming out with the ball. You wouldn't find a more composed backline, would you? Because when they come out with the ball, they very rarely hit it 70, 80 yards. They find a half back or a midfielder, they rarely hit it past that. But again, it's the downside of things. They're so good, they've been great all year, but they do give up a height disadvantage. And I think Galway are definitely going to try and take advantage of that this on Sunday.
But the ten goals is very, very impressive, Cheddar. And, like, I mean, David Burke's pretty much summed up their game plan, which we've been talking about all year. He's talking about the midfield battle, and he says they're playing a deep half forward line. The half back line is sitting, and it's suiting the two midfielders, as there has Keane Lynch that can attack from deep positions. So, like, I mean, you know, they're not conceding because their half back line is pretty much holding their positions, and their half forward line is jumping back to help out as well, and they're just become really compact.
Yeah, and I suppose you're really looking at that as a term for defensive cohesion here. And look, they've got that right. And look, there are the things that Galway will look at on Sunday to try and break that down. You know, you have a Limerick half forward line of Morrissey and Hegarty playing very deep as wing forwards. But you also have Kyle Hayes, who is a former centre back, now centre forward, coming way back to field a lot of the time. And some of the times they're offering the defensive screen there, but they're also offering an outlet for ball. So even if a Limerick defender wins the ball, he has an option of a 30 metre hurley pass in front of him just to clear his lines here. So I think, you know, there are some of the things that Galway will look at. Will they just take them on physically, which I think they might?
Will they follow Hegarty and Morrissey?
Oh no, neither. No, they won't. Definitely won't do that.
Right.
They definitely won't do that. I couldn't see that happening, because if you leave space in front of Graham Mulcahy or Aaron Gillan, that's exactly what he wants here. But I think they will come up with something a little bit different. Incidentally, Limerick will also, and you know, it'll be really interesting the first 10 or 15 minutes to see, you know, what each management team brings to the game for the first 15 minutes, how that works for them, but more importantly, how the other team reacts to that. Because you would like to be on the offensive in these things, that your game plan was what sticks early, and now you force the other team to do something that they may not have practiced, and that, you know, they may have done some little bit of rehearsal on it, but it's not the way they want to play. You're forcing them to play the way they don't want to play.
There's also the danger for Limerick game plan against Galway in that Aidan Hart is very comfortably used to playing the forwards, and Padraig Mannion is well able to score as well. Yeah. That, like, I mean, would the instruction to them be, when they drop, make a nuisance of yourself, make sure you're a threat to them, that they're not just given a free roll around the whole field?
Well, they've done that all year, Willie. They've been so effective coming forward and getting on getting scores. The thing with Hegarty and Hayes and all coming back to down the pitch, and Morrissey, they're unusual as a half forward line, because most half forwards, if they get the ball 70, 80 yards out, they shoot. Whereas their first part of call nearly all the time is give it to the full forward line and get in and support.
That's why they play such a beautiful brand of hurling,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely. But if you have Mannion and McInerney and all in between you and the full forward line, and they're dropping back and getting on them breaking balls, it's going to cause the game plan might go out the window then. I think you might have them lads shooting more on Sunday, because if they're shooting more, it's going to force Mannion and all to have to push up and then leave the space in front of you.
Yeah.
So I think early days on Sunday, I think you might have Limerick's half forward line shooting a lot more than they have in the past,
to create that
space in front of them, and then revert back to how they did play up to get them to the final.
Yeah.
I think you might have them shooting a bit more on Sunday just to cause that bit of tension, because Galway are going to be looking at it saying they won't want to pull their half back line out at all, because it's going to feed into Limerick's game plan, but they might be forced to.
Yeah.
I agree with Michael on certain aspects of that, but I think there's a part before that that's absolutely critical. When you were playing your wing forwards deep out the field for a defensive green, fine, but for an offensive way of playing, you are now an option for an outlet ball, and it's absolutely critical that your halfback line is in the game and on the ball to be able to put those balls out there to allow the likes of Gerard Hegarty to shoot from distance. And I just think that Galway will target the Limerick halfback line, because if you look back at the semi-final against Cork, the Limerick half-back line, Limerick faded out of the game, not because they were tired or anything like that, but the central part of their game plan is the distribution of the platform at the half-back line. And they were outplayed a little bit there, particularly with Cork bringing Kearney out to the middle third and then bringing Meade out the wing forward. And the half-back line wasn't as influential. And the minute Kearney went off, and maybe to a lesser extent Darragh Fitzgibbon went off, and towards the end of the game, Limerick half-back line came thundering into the game, and they were able to provide that distribution platform form again. So I think if Galway target that half back line and break it up and stop it from being getting themselves free for to be able to carry ball off of the half back line and then distribute it intelligently up the field, I think then the likes of Garrod and Tom Morrissey being back the field may be a little bit in no man's land, and you know, may not be as influential as you would like them to be.
So like, I mean, well, this is a thing, right? So here's, if I was the Galway manager, now tell me I'm stupid if needs be, I don't, they always, number one, they'll pull a rabbit out of the hat with Joe Canning. We don't know where he's going to play. Last year in the All-Ireland, they put him out wing forward. Against the last day against Clare, they put Conor Whelan out centre forward to, because of the sweeper. Cathal Mannion can play anywhere.
Yeah.
So is this a case where you play Joe Canning, Conor Whelan, Cathal Mannion in the half forward line, because the Limerick halfbacks like to hold their position, and then you play your three big men, Conor Cooney, Johnny Glynn and Niall Burke, in the full forward line where Limerick don't like high ball? Do you know what I mean? Do you completely match up like that, because they are very changeable, these forwards anyways?
Yeah, like, you have the big men up there, but the thing about Galway forwards is they're all quite big, William. They can, like, you need the ball to get into the full forward line first, and James Cahill doesn't tend to go short. He seems to hit the ball to the half forward line.
But he mixed
line.
It up a bit.
He did in the semi final, but if you look at him, his overall play throughout the year, it's a long ball to the half forward line, so you need ball winners there as well, you know. And
well, it does take away that cook out option.
It does a little way, but I think you'll have Canning centre forward. I think he'll cause Hannon some troubles. Like, Declan Hannon's a brilliant distributor of the ball. He's brilliant on the ball. He's just not quite mobile enough to get across that line. I think Canning could cause him trouble there. If he moves across that half forward line, takes him out of that pocket of centre back, it could cost Limerick trouble.
Yeah, okay. Cheddar, do you like my idea here?
No, I disagree with a lot of that, guys. I think Declan Hannon, I think some of the things that have served Galway well to date, Cathal Mannion being in a sort of a roaming role, foraging for ball around the field, and Joe Canning playing further out the field, again looking for ball, but equally, you know, trying to cause problems for the centre back, would probably play into Limerick's hands a little bit on Sunday, because it's freeing up half backs to become loose, to be able to take passes out of their defence. And I take the point that Cathal Mannion might shoot three or four pints, but if Limerick get a start with the game plan and the method of hurling that they're playing with, it'll be a huge advantage to them, and I think you'd really want to knock them back on that. So Declan Hannon was originally, up to 2016 was full forward on the Limerick team, and, you know, mightn't like aggressive type hurling. Now, he's a superb centre back as well. I'm not saying that he's not a centre back, he is, but he's one of these centre backs that likes to step back a little bit and dictate the play by the way he distributes ball. Letting Joe Canning out the field, he might score a couple of points, and he might hurt you in that sense, but you're given you're giving up the whole Limerick game plan to be able to play the way they want to play. And if you have Cathal Mannion roaming out the field as well, that's an extra defender to have there to be able to work the ball through the lines out of the defence and be able to put in real precise ball in into the forward line. I'll be really interested to see that. Do Galway change the way they play a little bit? And probably,
so you think that half back line needs to be marked?
Absolutely rip into that half back line, and I'd make it a contested ball on the half back line the whole time. And Michael makes a point about Skettle. I certainly would be dropping some balls on top of some some of their key half back line to engage them. Don't allow them to be able to step out into open play, to be able to take passes off of Mike Casey. I have to compliment Limerick that in pressure games so far, you know, when they were under pressure, they still worked the ball out of the defence. And I can certainly remember Mike Casey on his own full back line still, you know, knocking 30 yard hurley passes, 20 yard hurling passes to half backs and working it out the field to Keane Lynch. And then when you're in about 40 metres or so away from the likes of Aaron Gillan, you're given the type of ball that he wants, or Graham Mulcahy. Whereas if you engage the likes of Dermot Byrne, Declan Hannan and Dan Morrissey really physically and force them on the back foot, that they're revert to type. Dermot Byrne's up to this year the way Limerick played. The traditional way Limerick played was get the ball and put it high into the full forward line and work off the breaks. They've always done that. And I probably see Galway, you know, thinking a little bit differently here and bringing something different to the game on Sunday that really engages that half back line, stops the platform for distribution. And if that happens, it's a serious problem for Limerick, because I'm not so sure that they have the type of players then, particularly inside, to be able to win that just 50-50 ball that's actually going to go in there. And if Galway will win that, just think for a minute, if Limerick wing forwards are up the field and the likes of Park Mannion is now free in front of his full back line and he takes the ball up the field, well, look, I can see Galway really dominating the game if that's the case.
Here's another one then. Is this a game for Garrod McInerney? Because we know he's a brilliant player, he's a physically dominating player. Limerick will not put one ball down his channel. There's not a hope of him catching. Like, this is when he was at his best, dominating Tip, who fed into his hands. And, you know, like, I mean, he won't follow Kyle Hayes around, so he'll hold the middle. But, like, he's holding the middle. What's the point of it? Because it's such precision. Balls go to the wings and to the sides. You can see Garrod McInerney just getting dizzy looking around the place here. Am I holding? Am I pushing up? I interviewed him recently in Galway and I was asking about TJ Reid, and he just calls it himself. He says, I let him off. And if I think he's doing too much damage, then I'll go up onto him, you know. But Kyle Hayes is just so kind of, you know, athletic and gets around the field so well. Garrod doesn't want to be chasing him around with his pace as well. But I do think the holding player, it's very dangerous for Galway with the quality of ball that goes in and the movement inside. What are you really covering? You're not going to be intercepting any of these passes, are you?
No, it's a centre-back's dilemma these days. Would you have a great hand? Like Garrod McInerney, it takes 1 year to people to realise you have a great hand. So last year he was unbelievable under the ball, but now no high ball goes down on him. Now Kyle Hayes has an excellent hand. I've seen him catch a few balls over Killian Buckley this year, who's really good in the year as well. But I think John Coyle would be saying give the ball to Kyle Hayes in when he comes back towards the middle, because if you give it to him and test McInerney's legs and see what they're like, because I think if he turns them he'll have the pace for him. I haven't seen many people catch Kyle Hayes this year. The speed of him is unreal. So he could cause huge trouble and I think the likes of Lynch in the midfield now will find Hayes over and over again if he's free. So I think McInerney will have to push up on him. I know he can't leave that gap in the middle of the pitch, but to a certain degree he'll have to push up because he'll cause too much trouble.
It will. And like, that's an interesting one. So the two biggest strengths of the Galway defence, and traditionally there was a weakness and they didn't have a centre back, they didn't have a full back. Now they have two dominating players. Doughty Burke is an absolute dominating full back in the traditional sense. Doughty Burke isn't going to have a traditional full back role on Saturday, Cheddar, because, like, I mean, he's going to be chasing Flanagan to the wings. He's going to be out of his comfort zone. He's going to be thinking, geez, this is not, I'm a bear in the square. I dominate this 6 yard box. Like, there'll be no dominating that 6 yard box. Like, the tactic often for Limerick against Cork, Flanagan go to the wing, Mulcahy's all over the place, and Gallan sneaks in on the square then, and he's there for that high ball. You know what I mean?
I think one of the corner there, because, again, as you always say, it's either Gallan or Flanagan is going to take up that position in the square. So I reckon Burke will stay there, and then the two cornerbacks are going to have to cover.
Do you think so? Yeah.
Galway are very hard to score goals against because of McInerney and Burke. They sort of keep their positions very well. They mind the goals, and if points are scored, it seems to be acceptable enough once they're not outrageous points being scored all over and over again. Mulcahy has that free roaming role, and like Gallan and Flanagan, they normally have a pinnacle. One of them is going to be there all the time. So Doughty Burke might try and just stay there, and whoever's there he's on.
Yeah, because it was very obvious against Cork, someone's on the edge of the square, Cheddar, because when Gallan caught a lot of those balls, it's on the edge of the square, and it's not the first time this year he seems to be on the edge of that square. So when he sees that movement from the other two, he's sneaking into there. So would there be an option for Doughty Burke just to hold that edge of that square?
They won't concede the space back there, certainly not in the earlier part of the game. But look, Galway have some options here. You know, know, if, for example, if Kyle Hayes just stays out in the middle of the field, in other words, is seriously trying to tempt Garrow and McInerney out there. Look, Padraig Manning has went in centre back for him, is a very good stick man, and he could equally hurt you the other way around. Yeah. So Gaul have a couple of options here, and look, I'd pay money to see Garrow and McInerney playing on Garrow and Hegarty or playing on Tom Morrissey. That'd be a fair old battle now between them. But I don't see Dahi Burke going out too far. Look, he'll go out a bit of the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, so some of the sort of the rules of thumb we would have had with centre backs in Leash would be, look, go as far as the 60, but look, if he's going out further than that, you know, you need to drop back then.
Right.
And we need to make sure that we get the ball to you. So we need to hurt the opposition with an extra man back there.
Can you see Dahi Burke picking up Galland then, for example, and not Flanagan? Because Flanagan's movement would be too much.
I think it'll depend. It'll be a little bit more, a little different than that, Willie. I do expect Limerick to bring something different here. I think they have to outfox Galway here. I think Galway have a tight set of backs. They're very, very physical. They'll be delighted to make that a physical contest, and if that's the way it goes, they'll win it. And as I go back to my other point, if the Limerick half back line are held and not be able to put that quality ball up the field, then you can have who you like in there. But I do expect Limerick. The problem is that Limerick don't have a huge amount of options here to be able to move players around the field. They're banking on two big men at wing forward coming back to field as primary ball winners, a big man at centre forward as a primary ball winner, without being serious forward threats. Their serious threats are inside with Galan, obviously, and equally with Graham Mulcahy. The only person that they've used around the field so far in different sort of roles is Seamus Flanagan. So I do think you might see something different on Sunday, and you might very well see them going just with Seamus Flanagan out the field, as he did a little bit against Cork, and not play the ball into the centre positions, just play it up into the corners every time with the likes of Galan and with the likes of Mulcahy. But I do think you'll see Limerick bring something to it. If that's the case, then Gaul will have a problem. If Seamus Flanagan is very influential in that middle third, or maybe along the half hour lines, picking up a lot of ball and spraying the ball around the place, well, then they're going to have to do something. Do the move Dahi Burke out the field. I'd be surprised if they did in the earlier part of the game, because you don't need to do it. So they'll probably bring back Joe Cooney as a third midfielder and just block up that space for the minute. You only need to counter tactic these things for about 10 minutes, because if you break what the opposition is trying to do, they're more than likely, almost always, will revert back to the way they want to play the game. So you only need to have, I suppose, tactical plies up your sleeve for about 10 minutes to be able to fix these things, and just, you know, I suppose, just see out those 10 minutes, and then, you know, the opposition will change around and you're back into the position that you want to be in again.
Right, okay, right, that's interesting. So, like, I mean, like, just on what you said there, Limerick, while we say they need to bring something different, they're actually a lot more predictable than Galway, in that we don't really know what way Galway will line up on the forwards. You know, like, they could play Mannion maybe at centre half back and have Garrod Hegarty or Garrod McInerney pick up Garrod Hegarty. I'm pretty sure that Limerick team is not going to change too much. No. Like, it's not like, and I don't see their system changing, or nor should it. But I definitely think they're a lot more predictable in their system than what Galway are.
Absolutely. No, they don't play orthodox, will you? Like, the full forward line, they all sort of stay in the middle. The three of them will stand in the middle, and then when the ball comes in, they spread out, you know, and the half forward line pull deep and always give the ball in. But as you say, Galway know this, they look at it. It's not as if they play an orthodox style, it's just, you know what style they're going to play. And as Cheddar said, I can't see them having the personnel to really change that up much. Dowling will come on and obviously bring something different to the game, but apart from that, there's not real, Galway are going to know what's going to happen. It's just if they've worked hard enough now in the last 2 weeks to counter that.
Well, that's the thing,
it's going
to be interesting. Just to mention the Limerick bench, and we mentioned this before, other than Dowling, anyone that comes in off the Limerick bench is just fitting into that system, isn't it, Cheddar? They don't actually change it.
That's really important. I think Shane Dowling is the game breaker player when he comes on. He's definitely bringing something completely different to the team, plays in a different way to the system, nearly plays as a lone wolf, really, coming on the field, and that's exactly what you might want. But bear in mind, Galway are well used to this at this stage, and they'll have their counter plan for that. And that may very well be a sub coming on the Galway team, because he doesn't seem to fit into the system of the way Limerick plays. He gets back to field, wins the ball, shoots from distance, and he's a game breaking player. You do have to take note of him. But I'd say, you know, Galway will be well aware of him at this stage in terms of what they want to do. I think what Limerick might look at is that they have some options in the full forward line. But I'd like to maybe understand the players a little bit more on this. Aaron Galan, I'm not so sure he can play on the other side of the field. Aaron Galan, if you look at him technically, likes to take the ball on a certain side and will always cross to the other side to shoot the point. And I'm sure that the likes of John Hanbury, I'm sure that Galway will have done an awful lot of analysis on that and understood that in terms of how you tackle him and the shoulder you approach him on that. But if they were to switch wings, for example, with Graham Mulcahy and himself, and force Galway Toohey to play on the other side, a left-hander, and John Hanbury to play on the side that he's not most comfortable on. Little things like that can just throw a defence, and of course if you get enough ball in there and you get some results out of it earlier on, little things like that can change it. But from what I've seen to date, and I'm going back to the league semi-final, Limerick play with a settled team. This has been a team that played all along, and it has played their best hurling. They play in a certain way, which is reasonably predictable, although might be very, very difficult to play against. And with the exception of Seamus Flanagan, they don't have a huge amount of options to be able to switch things around. For example, if Limerick wanted to play like Cork did, where to bring out Carney as that sort of third midfielder from wing forward, but he's really a link man midfielder and still a scoring threat, well then they're going to have to drop Morrissey or Hegarty or something like that to do that, and they certainly won't want to do that. So I do think they'll bring something new to it, if for no other reason that Paul Kinnerk and Alan Cunningham will want to do that. And bear in mind, he's had a lot of success in doing that in an All-Ireland replay with Clare against Cork. But it's difficult to see how they can do that. Of course, the other one is using Keane Lynch as a forward, but I don't think they'll want to do that either. He's just been too influential at midfield.
Yeah, okay, great stuff, lads. We'll be back in a second with Paddy Power predictions.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
You do.
No, we don't. But
you didn't let Shamey talk at a hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, Paddy Power predictions, lads. So Paddy Power has it. Galway are 4-6. Limerick are 13-8, and the draw is 9-1. Handicap here is 2 points, which really isn't too much. What are we thinking here? Who, like Galway, clear favourites, but not massive favourites. And I suppose the semi-finals probably reflected that.
Absolutely. The way I'd always look at it, Willie, is if the two teams perform to their best of their abilities, I have it Galway all day long. I just think they have the experience, they have the hurlers. What's going to be huge is the benches. I think, like, against Cork, Limerick's bench came in and scored 2-6. 2-6 is a huge return from subs coming on. And Pat Ryan and the likes of Shane Dowling, they do bring an awful lot to a team, but I just don't think it's going to be enough. I think they'll need a bit more development in their players. I think Galway have the mentality. I don't think they've got enough credit, to be honest with you. They won the All-Ireland last year. It's a new format they've came into, and they've played replays, they've played unbelievably tough matches, and they've come out on top all the time. And I just think it's going to be so, their mentality coming into this game is going to be so strong. We've seen them giving up big leads. I think they'll learn from it. I think if they start strong, there could be real danger signs for Limerick throughout the game. So I'm going for Galway.
You're going for Galway win. Cheddar, what do you think?
You'd have to go for Galway. Based on something on what Michael is saying here, look, they're All-Ireland champions. They will not give up that easily. You know, I talked earlier on about them being All-Ireland champions in 80 and giving it up very easily in 81. So I don't think they'll want to give up that easily. There are some concerns about Galway. Some of their players are not in their best form.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's anything to do with fatigue. And to be honest with you wouldn't really know what it is, because it could be something in some players' personal lives or something like that, but they certainly have some players that are just not in the top of their form at the minute. And sometimes in All-Ireland, because of the sense of occasion and all of that, can just kickstart you, reboot you to that level of performance again. I think if Galway go to out physical the Limerick half back line earlier on and disrupt the Limerick game plan, and if Limerick revert to type and start knocking high balls up the field, I think the game is over. because I think Galway will win that type of game. If Limerick can hang tough in that first 20 minutes, and, you know, even if they're a pint or two behind, but they get their method of play going and you know, it's successful for them and they're in the game, then I think I can go anyway. But I just do think that, look, Galway have a lot of quality players. They have a strong defence. They're All-Ireland champions. They've been in All-Ireland now for, what, 3 or 4 times now in the last 7 or 8 years. And, you know what it takes to get things done on big days like that. I just give them, I think there'll be nothing in it. I'm surprised. I'm not interested in betting or would even talk about it, to be honest with you. But I'm surprised at the odds on the draw, because it will be that close. But I do think that Galway have enough quality. And I think in that type of game that they will win the game.
OK, great stuff. Just to, so somebody's right, guaranteed on Monday, I'll go for Limerick, right? All right, we'll come back with Joe from Paddy Power. Joe, how's it going?
Good, thanks, Colin.
It's our final hurling show for the odds here, Joe. Is All-Ireland Fever grip Paddy Power?
Absolutely. Well, certain pockets of it, like a lot of places in Dublin, there's a lot of heads that wouldn't be too up on it. But no, I'm certainly really looking forward to Sunday night. Can't wait to get into Croke Park.
Yeah. So we've mentioned some of the betting here. Cheddar and Michael are going for Galway win. I've gone for Limerick. We haven't mentioned the draw. The draw is 9-1, and it is the year of the draw.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been so many tight games this year across the board, but even the two teams themselves, we've got Galway having drawn both their Leinster final and their first semi-final, and then Limerick obviously have the draw with Cork as well. So they're both two teams that are used to tight games and certainly used to not losing them, whatever they're going on to win them the first day. So I think 9-1 there, given the way the year's gone, I'd say it's a good chance there'll be another draw this weekend.
Yeah, and even if the draw doesn't really work out, you have that usual bet, a draw or either team to win by one, between 1 to 4 points is 10-11, and that, for me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly. I think any time we've mentioned it during the season, whether it be football or hurling, I think they tend to come true, because I mean, if you're expecting a tight game at all, even if you're not sure which side it's going to come down on, whether it be maroon or green, I think you can take either team to win by 1-4 or a draw, and you'd be paid out at 10-11. So you're getting nearly evens on something that's, unless the game goes wildly kind of away from what people are expecting, you think that will probably happen.
Is that a loss leader for you, a bet like that?
I think it's something that we haven't, it's in kind of the full markets. I mean, a lot of people like to bet on their handicap bets or a team to win or a goal scorer. It's something that might nearly get lost in some people when they go onto the site. But I think at the moment, yeah, I'd say those odds will have to keep coming down the more people maybe getting on that.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so you have the two half-time, full-time bets as well.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of based on the way Galway's last few games have gone, nearly their whole season in the really biggest games. They've raced into what look like unassailable leads, only to be dragged back into a dogfight. Obviously, it happened against Kilkenny and happened twice against Clare. So, just on that basis, so Galway to be leading at half time and Limerick to win at full time is 5-1. Obviously, Limerick had a very strong finish against Cork the last day, and they did it both days against Cork, actually, when they got the draw in the first game. And then, as well as that, Galway to be winning at half time and the draw at full time is 16-1. So again, that happened with Clare, and Limerick obviously dragged themselves back in to get a draw against Cork before they went to extra time. So 16-1 for Galway at half time and a draw at full time could be one to look for.
Yeah, so if you fancy the draw at 9-1, the obvious one leading on from that is Galway with their fast starts to be winning at half time.
Yeah, exactly. Pushes those odds a bit out there to, if you want to put your euro or two down to have a little bit of extra niggle in it.
Yeah, okay, so the money back special is there as usual for the first goal scorer if he scores at any time.
Yeah, always a popular one, particularly around All-Ireland final day, who's going to get in for the first goal. Johnny Glynn's a fella we've been talking a lot about the last while, all around the first goals, and particularly this weekend against what's a relatively small Limerick full back line, and it's been noted a lot of places, so I'm sure John Kiley's got a few tricks up his sleeve to stifle the big goalie man. But I still think Donny Glynn, a first goal scorer, 15-2, I mean, he's guaranteed to win a couple of balls in around the square if he gets enough room to swing or hurl at it. He could be a good one, and if he scores any time and Galway win the match, that also paying at 4. And then with Aaron Gillan, I know he's been dropping his hurl left, right and centre, but he's still creating the chances, so that the traders here, the GA traders, are still really fancying to be the first goal scorer, and for him to score the first goal is 13 this weekend. I'm sure those drop hurls will be in his mind, so he'd be desperate to get one chance and rattle the net early. And then along with the same lines as Johnny Glynn, if he scores a goal any time and Limerick go on to win the match, that's 4-1.
So do you have any sort of a bet on Aaron Gallant to score a goal with his foot? Is like 1,000-1 or something? That's a very outside bet, I'm sure, with his finishing.
Yeah, well, just, I'll have to go on to the lads and get that special upper. I can land the score with the boot. He'd probably be around the same price, in fairness. Like, every goal chance he's had has been with the boot. One man's bound to go in at some stage.
Yeah, he does need to. He needs to hone his technique, I think, is like what everybody's saying. So, what the next one is, Canning versus Galan. In top scorer bet, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, well, it's a match bet, so it's purely just Canning versus Gallant, so they wouldn't have to outscore the rest of the players on the pitch. It's kind of just the two marksmen of the team to beat each other overall. So Joe Canning's 4-6 to outscore Gallant this weekend, and Aaron is 11-10 to outscore Joe. There's a number of these different runs on sites with kind of corner forwards against each other, fielders against each other, to outscore each other. Just a few extra little match bets for the head-to-head.
Right, are they popular?
And around these bigger games, they tend to be a little bit more, because you can be fairly certain of what starting teams are going to be, and you might be picking out your key matchups or who's going to be marking who and who might dominate who. So you get a bit more interest around the bigger games like this.
Right. Okay. And as usual, man of the match award. So you've got some of the old reliables here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man of the match again is another big All Ireland final one where people are picking out their favourite players of who's going to be the man on the day. David Burke, to repeat last year. I mean, he's unreal, David. Sometimes during the year, you think he's not going that well, and as soon as you get to one of the crucial games, the really key games like the Clare replay, he was excellent there in the first half in Turles. So if he was to win man of the match 2 years running, he's 14-1, and on the goal side as well, Pádraig Mannion is 14-1. He's having an amazing season. He's our strong favourite for hurler of the year as it is. So if he was to pull out a big win man in the match of 14-1, he'd be absolutely nailed on for hurler of the year. And just on the Limerick side, Declan Hannan, the man who's been having a very steady year there at centre back, if he was to keep Joe quiet or whoever he ends up picking up from centre forward, at 25-1 could be a bit of value for Declan there. He's a very experienced campaigner at this stage and a leader of that Limerick team. And just another man who's having a great year, Gerald Hegarty. He was an absolute storm. He had an absolute storm against Cork. He was everywhere. He's coming in at 20-1. So if he was to have a big bearing on the game and Limerick were to win, he could be one to look out for.
Okay, finally, we have some John Milan specials, which I'm sure will be very interesting.
Yeah. Well, John, kind of similar to Colin Murdoch, likes to give us a few tips now and again. So just a couple of ones that I picked up from the site there that he has in. So Galway to win and both teams to score a goal. He's tipping that up at 7-5. And then as well as that, for the man of the match nomination, so not to win, but just to be two of the players nominated for both David Burke man to be nominated on the RTE Sunday game is 18-1. And he also has a few more specials from John on site if you're to check them out, but they're two of the ones I picked out there from him.
Alright, great stuff. I'm sure everyone will go on and have a look at a few more John Milan specials here. Thanks very much, Joe.
No bother at all, Colin. Fair play.
Great stuff. Right, that's all we've time for today, and we'll be back with a big show on Monday. Obviously we'll know who the All-Ireland champions are, so we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
When I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.